You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You are now entering the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, a show that uncovers what's fact, what's fake, and what's fun in the crazy world of pseudo-archaeology. Hello and welcome to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 178. I am your host, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, and tonight, cryptids. My favorite top 10 cryptids of all time. But what is a cryptid? All right. Hello and welcome back, everybody. It is nice to be here. And today I thought I would talk about cryptids. And this came from a discussion I was having with my daughter. And we were just joking around, you know, just about silly stuff, fake stuff, fun stuff. And she was like, bro, what about the cryptids? You know, and I have to say that I hadn't used the term cryptids very much. And I was pretty sure I knew what it meant. And I looked it up and luckily I was right. But it's one of those ones where you're like, wait, what is that again? If you don't know, cryptids are like rumored animals or beings that are out there, but we don't have proof of, right? Cryptids are these creatures that often many people believe in, but there's never any good evidence of. Every single sort of what on earth, unexplained, who knows, ancient aliens TV show goes over these at one time or another. I remember when I was in the show Strange and Suspicious, we did several of these. And, you know, I'm always 4% reticent of going over cryptids just because this is the pseudo-archaeology podcast. And sometimes cryptids themselves are not archaeological, but they are definitely archaeology adjacent. I have done shows here in the past, like on the Duende and this kind of stuff, which are these mythological creatures that the locals where I worked in Belize, they would talk about, you know, so it counts in that way. You have certain pseudoscientific expeditions almost that go looking for these kind of things, you know, so kind of I'm actually happy to go over it. It fits. You know what I mean? Now, if you are into cryptids or if you are into these supernatural animals and beings, you are practicing cryptozoology. And cryptozoology is a branch of pseudoscience. And just right there, I love that pseudoscience has branches. You know, so when you get your PhD in pseudoscience, you need to know what was your focus, dude? What was your branch? You know, like I'm a Mayanist, a Maya archaeologist. And those guys, they're like, no, we're cryptids. We're cryptozoologists, dude. So take us seriously. Now, I thought I would go over my top 10 favorites. And it was kind of hard to make this list because there's 5 or 6 or 7 where you know you got to go over them and they're old school classics. But it's like the more I thought about it, the more of them I started to remember and it started to branch out. And I was like, oh, no, I'm thinking of too many cryptids. So I'm just going to go down this list of 10-ish. By 10-ish meaning it may be 9, it may be 11. And I do, just so we know this stuff, I want to go over like the origin of each of them, and then I want to go over the why to each of them. Really, they're there. These creatures in our mythology are there to explain some sort of unexplained thing, you know? So when are they from? Why are they there? And kind of what's their thumbprint on our culture or on our society, right? Well, how are they thought of these days? And sometimes even how have they changed over time? Because a lot of times that happens. I love this kind of stuff, you guys. It's like, I love this. My new term of the month is historiography, right? I love kind of the story. Like, how do these mythologies come together? You know, does it pull in earlier stories, which often it does? Anyhow, I found that Wikipedia was really cool on this, although incomplete Wikipedia. you have a couple cryptids not on your official cryptids list that are like really important and fun. And some of my favorites, not on the official Wikipedia list, but Wikipedia did do a great job of organizing their cryptids. They organize cryptids into four categories. Aquatic cryptids. So these are going to be cryptids that are like in the ocean or in rivers or in locks. Oh, yeah. Then they have terrestrial cryptids, right? Ones that live on the land. Then they have a group that's called hominids, which is basically like ones that are human-like or human-esque. And it's hard, you guys. Some of the cryptids I'm going to talk about, they kind of, it's like, are they terrestrial creatures or are they more like humans? Because so many of the human-esque ones are kind of part human, part creature, you know? So I'm not here to say you have to put it in category two or three. It doesn't really matter. It's just an organization principle. And then finally, they have flying ones. There are certain cryptids that fly. Some of my favorite ones. But let's start at the top of this list that I just made in no particular order with, yes, Nessie herself, the Loch Ness Monster. The Loch Ness Monster is probably one of the top three most famous cryptids of all time, yeah? And I had fun kind of looking into this, looking through what's the history of this. Now, as with so many of these, the history can go back hundreds and hundreds of years, right? Because you'll have these specific stories that will wrap in to some sort of old mythology, right? So you can say the Loch Ness Monster, as we think of it in the modern era, I think comes from the 1933 photo. You guys know that photo, that black and white one, the OG one of the Loch Ness Monster. It looks kind of like a brontosaurus kind of coming out of some water. And it's really, of course, grainy and basic. But you also have like stuff as far back as like the 7th century, you know, in that world. Oh, and this is Scottish, right? This is a Scottish locks. So another thing that's really fun about cryptids is they span the globe. They're almost like a human universal or like a cultural universal. Everyone has these sort of larger than life mythological creatures out there to explain the unexplainable. So that's what we have for Loch Ness Monster, right? It can be as early as the 7th century all the way up to the modern era, which starts with the 1933 photo. And this is, of course, a large water-based creature. Sometimes looks a little bit more like a brontosaurus, sometimes way more swimming and way almost more eel-like or snake-like, right? And every version in between. I do think it's super interesting that the 1933 photo, that whole thing started in August of 1933. And at the time, the movie King Kong had just come out. This happens several times here where a movie captures the public's imagination and people in the public then either think they see the actual thing or they use it as an impetus for a creature. So in this case, the King Kong aspect, it's not King Kong itself. If you watch the 1933 movie, there is like a Nessie looking creature kind of to the side at one point. So that I can't imagine that's not part of why they would like fake that photo and then use it to go like, oh my God, there's a Loch Ness Monster. And of course, the Loch Ness Monster is there to explain what happened to Uncle Joe when he walked down to the riverside at night. I mean, he was drunk, but then we never saw him again. Loch Ness Monster must have gotten them, right? And so many of these are going to explain in that way what happened at night, what happened in the forest. In this case, what happened down by the loch, down by the water. Water always has an intrinsically scary bit to it because so many people can't swim or so many people find themselves washed away somehow or in water that's too fast. It's scary. You can die in it. And we tend to forget that swimming lessons are largely a post-World War II thing, right? Most people in most areas of the world throughout most of human history could not swim. So large bodies of water are scary. So that's why scary things can be in it. But not all things are scary in the water, which brings us to number two, mermaids. I love mermaids. Never been the hugest fan of the Loch Ness Monster. I find it too amorphous, not enough personality. But mermaids, dude, the idea of these wily women, these sirens calling out to me, right? And the idea of mermaids is so basic It's just sort of like half women, half aquatic creatures. That these go back, we can go with like the Greek mythology on this, but obviously this kind of thing can go on forever. And it's, of course, telling you what's out there in the great beyond of the great oceans, right? What made those ships ultimately crash on the reef? This idea of a siren. These sirens are always female, always calling you with their feminine wiles, right? A trope that's used forever. Even when you look specifically into Greek mythology, these aren't mermaids exactly, but the Scylla and Charybdis who bring you to, you know, get crushed on the stones. Scylla and Charybdis, every time I say that, all I can think of is the Police song, I'll Be Wrapped Around Your Finger, because Sting actually uses Scylla and Charybdis in the lyrics. Pretty awesome. But the mermaid trope of, you know, feminine wiles will get you in trouble, that kind of thing. Of course, it's male centric, but there you go. Been around forever, never going anywhere, right? And of course, if you see some sort of little wiggle in the water out there, it's like, oh my God, was that a mermaid? You know, oh my God, was that Loch Ness Monster? Third, staying with our watery aspect, the Kraken. Ah, the Kraken. One of my favorites, because if you're Gen X like me, not only do you know the Police is wrapped around your finger, but look, you aren't Gen X unless you watched Clash of the Titans. Yeah, I'm talking about 1981 Clash of the Titans. You aren't Gen X unless you or one of your friends had like HBO and Clash of the Titans was on and you were like 12 years old and you were like, whoa, that's kind of PG-13. Wow, I think she's kind of hot. You know what I'm saying, Clash of the Titans. But more than that, the quote, release the Kraken. Yeah, you know, that's great. The Kraken is just a huge octopus and or squid, right? I've seen the Kraken referred to as an unconfirmed cephalopod. But from Norway, I didn't know this. It's fun to look up. From Norway from the 1100s, and of course explains why ships would sink, why ships never return. You know, it comes from Norway, you know, a coastal nation. It totally makes sense. There is also, if you're way into the Kraken rum, right? I am a rum aficionado, and I have to say Kraken rum is like, it's only okay. It's pretty basic, my friends, but that's all right. I dig the Kraken. So been around forever. Never going to go away. More of a fun one in our culture. An open ocean, way out there, huge creature that crushes ships. With that, let's just take a break and we'll be right back with some more. Well, hello and welcome back to the Pseudo-Archaeology Podcast, episode 178, where we are going over my top 10 favorite cryptids. And we have just done, what, the first three or something like that? Really vaguely aquatic cryptids, ones in the water. And, you know, we've been talking about what these are, why they're around, you know, how people believe in them. Some of these are, again, have centuries of backstory to them, right? Others don't. And actually, the new ones are some of my very favorite because we can see them be born and change in real time. And one of those is number four, the chupacabra. The chupacabra has become so huge in pop culture. You know, it is just blasted on the scene. I did a whole pseudo-archaeology podcast on the chupacabra a while back. And this is one, if you guys remember, originally started in the 1990s in Puerto Rico, specifically, I think 95 or 96, because it was a direct rip from the movie Species. And in that movie, there's like a half lizard, half woman, you know, creature. So it's like you watch the movie and then that is what you envision when you look out and you see that a bunch of your goats are dead. So a woman, you know, talked about this thing killing all her goats at night. And so that answers that question, you know, why? Like what is the why of the chupacabra? It's there to, again, explain the unexplained. How did all these goats die at night, right? It wasn't a wolf. It wasn't a coyote. Oh, is it the chupacabra, you know? I love watching the chupacabra change, too. And you can see it's because it's this creature that does things at night. There's other mythologies and cryptids that do that too. So the chupacabra just feels old. It feels like it has that ancient history, but it doesn't. You know, isn't that awesome? The other thing I love about this is the evolution of it. So if you're talking 90s chupacabra, remember the 90s? I do. If you're talking Kurt Cobain style chupacabra, this is a lizard creature. This is a lizard. It kind of walks on all fours, but it's like a lizard creature, you know, scaly green, that kind of thing, that's going to attack animals at night. It has totally changed into way more of a coyote-like creature. So when you're dealing with chupacabra sightings, it's always like hairy coyote kind of things. And again, bringing back Strange and Suspicious, when I was on that show, there was some video, I think, of a quote unquote chupacabra sighting. And it was just, you know, it was a coyote with mange, or it's some sort of rabid dog, or that's usually what they are. So interesting. I love learning about how mythology, you know, changes through time, modern mythology, you know, that's totally awesome. I'm curious to see where it goes. I think the mold of chupacabra is becoming more coyote-ish, you know? I don't see it rotating back to lizard world. Speaking of ones that I've done podcasts on in the past, where are we at? Five? The Duende. Yay, Belize, the Duende. Did a whole podcast on these guys. They are originally, I believe, from Spain. So this is hundreds of years. This is a colonial kind of thing. So this is a Spanish from Spain idea. The Duende, if we remember, is a like a leprechaun kind of creature, right? Physically small, human-ish person that is very mischievous, you know, that braids the horse's hair, that wears, like, that their feet are on backwards and wears a big hat. There's all these little additives to what the Duende are. But why for the Duende? Because the forest is mysterious, because people go missing out there. You know, in Belize, it's like the Duende will steal your children. You must beware, you know, because sometimes children get lost and never return from the jungle, you know. So it explains the unexplainable. Where did my children go? And I'm looking for them and I can't find them. Ah, the Duende got them. So this is one that's just, you know, been around forever and continues. And I love hearing stories about the Duende, and the little specifics are great, like what they do. Very cool. Which brings us, let's see, where are we at? Five, six. Number six with a bullet. Let's see. Yes. I'm going to go with Deer Woman. This is a Native American one. Largely Great Plains. So there's different, of course, different Native American mythologies. And, you know, you can have local, for me in Southern California, you can have local Chumash mythologies, and then you can broaden out to more general areas across the United States, you know, the Great Plains. You can get more like towards the Mississippi River, Eastern Woodlands, up towards Great Lakes, Northwest Coast, right? There's all kinds of rich Native American mythology, and sometimes they include cryptids. And these are some of my favorites. Deer Woman. I was introduced to Deer Woman. Now, as an archaeologist, I've heard a lot of these, you know, in the past, or these kind of things. But I really saw her for the first time in the show Reservation Dogs. I always recommend watch Reservation Dogs, you guys. It is my very favorite, I think, Native show on what it's like in the reservation, and specifically what's like for young people, you know, growing up, reservation life. So like Deer Woman as a Great Plains cryptid. This is Lakota would do Deer Woman, but there'd be other cultures that would talk about this too. Deer Woman is a beautiful woman who has like deer feet, or also as a shape changer in a way, could be a deer herself, right? You see this a lot, really, around the world. When we see creatures like this, they will have human traits and animal traits, and sometimes they were just the animal, or sometimes they are totally human with just a little bit of the animal. So this is the beautiful woman with deer feet. They did it great in Reservation Dogs. The idea with Deer Woman is she is often there for vengeance against the men who have harmed her, right? And so a great source of really female power in these Native cultures. More recently, it's been, Dear Woman's sort of been an icon for like the Indigenous women disappearances because of how many Indigenous women have been, you know, kidnapped, murdered, just disappeared, and how little it's been reported. Things are getting better, but it still needs more, you know. I think that's a great use of mythology of the past being brought forward into the present to get eyes on certain things. And also, it's just a dynamic character. That's why they use it in Reservation Dogs. They, speaking of watching stuff on TV, there's also the movie Wind River. I don't think they use the Dear Woman. I might be forgetting, but I do recommend watching Wind River, you guys. It's about specifically this issue. Really well done. So anyway, Dear Woman, I think one of the most just dynamic, interesting of the cryptids. From there, staying in the native world, you have the idea of like skinwalkers and the Wendigo. I'm going to use this as 2-for-1. What is this, like 7 or something? I'm at 7, I think. The skinwalker is largely Navajo. So this is the Southwest, right? This is like the desert Southwest. And this is like a witch creature, sort of a shapeshifter creature. From what I gathered, it's like this is an entity that is wrong, right? This is an entity that's like evil, sort of the opposite of a medicine man. So a medicine man is there to help the community, to help you out, to help your problems, to help your physical self, whereas the skinwalker is not, right? The sort of anti to the light. You know, that's what I would call a skinwalker. And the skinwalker, to me, the name is used so often that I want to just, you know, clear it up a little to tell you that's what it is. The Wendigo is from the eastern U.S. and is, for me, much more hard to define. The Wendigo is really, to me, is just an evil spirit, almost like an evil wind that gets into you. And what happens is you, when you're possessed by the Wendigo, you eat people, right? That's sort of the ideology of that. You kill, but you stalk people to kill them and eat them, this kind of thing, the Wendigo, right? A very negative spirit that might come catch you, you know, come catch you up. All right. So, coming to, I think, the top three, the last of the top three, which means I got to take a commercial break so you guys will wait and maybe still be there when I get back. Well, hello and welcome back one last time to the Pseudo Archaeology Podcast, episode 178, and I've been discussing my favorite cryptids. I know you have some too. And even with my top three, or my last three, I should say, I know you're going to listen to this and you'll be like, King Kellerman, you forgot this one, man. I know it's an incomplete list. I get it. But they're my favorites, or they're the ones that I think are worth talking about of the last three. Number eight, Bigfoot. You got to deal with Bigfoot and or the Sasquatch. And you know what? I'm throwing the Yeti in as well. Bigfoot, Sasquatch, and the Yeti. Big, huge, hairy, apey guy. Right? So of these three, again, it's all the idea of a hairy wild man out in the wilderness. That's just one of those time immemorial things. Been around forever. Many cultures. For the Sasquatch, Bigfooty, Yeti thing, I would say Sasquatch comes out from British Columbia in the 1920s, the sort of mythology. And it's, you know, it's always, I saw this big hairy man out in the wilderness. No, I don't have any good evidence, but I swear I saw him. My favorite is actually the Bigfoot take. The Bigfoot thing, the name Bigfoot, I didn't realize that Sasquatch was the older name. I thought it was Bigfoot first, and then they slapped Sasquatch on later. The name Sasquatch comes from the 20s. Bigfoot is from 1958. And the term Bigfoot, and it's from Humboldt. So both of these are in the Pacific Northwest. But Bigfoot is because in 1958, they found these huge tracks, right? These huge footprints. And so they called them Bigfoot. And you guys have probably heard all the print silliness. Oh, we found these prints. Oh, the prints. Oh, the huge footprints. Oh, Bigfoot must be real. In 2002, there was a friend of the guy who kind of first talked about the Bigfoot thing. They found in the friend's basement a bunch of like carved wooden feet. Because they had these huge carved wooden feet that they would just like push in the mud, and then people would come and find them. It's so funny. And there's a whole excellent backstory to that where they originally made them to keep people out somewhere else. And then they thought it was funny and they thought it worked well. So they like made more of these footprints in other areas, and the whole Bigfoot thing wrapped in. It's obviously a fake, right? It is a written, recorded, here's the proof, fake. Here are the wooden footprint things that we use to make the footprints. Even with as fake and silly as Bigfoot is, and the Yeti too, right? The Yeti is the same story, but in around Mount Everest, right? In like Nepal and Tibet and this kind of thing. The Yeti, the idea of the abominable snowman, which really the term abominable snowman is from the 20s. It originally came out from one of the early, I believe 1921. Don't quote me, but 1921, one of the failed Everest expeditions, Tenzing Norgay and Hillary make the climb to the top finally in 1953, I think. I might be a year off again. But of course, several teams tried before and failed. This is from one of the earlier failure teams. They talked about the, quote, abominable snowman. And that, you know, became just ingrained in the public mythos forever. But one thing I can say about Bigfoot that I notice differently than any of these others is that I know people who are reasonable, rational, grown-up, adult human beings, and they believe in Bigfoot. You know, it's the one that seems to get through people's shields. Like, I have heard people talk about this, and I'm like, are you kidding? Do you know who you're talking to? The narrator of the pseudo-archaeology podcast? And they're trying to tell me that Bigfoot is real. And they're like, no, Kinkella, no, this one. I'm like, you have got to be freaking kidding me, man. Do I have to say it? Oh, yes, I do. There's no such thing as Bigfoot. Oh, man. But it is the one. It's for whatever reason. That one will not die. It's like the Atlantis of cryptids. It will not die. For my final two, I will say for Bigfoot, a lot of times you're like, well, you think they saw bears? I think they saw bears. Because bears, they can stand up. Bears can look very human. And that would make total sense. So I think a lot of these times, sometimes it's other humans walking around, but bears. And of course, Bigfoot explains what are the mysterious things happening out in the forest at night. My last two. Some of my favorites. The last two, number nine, the Mothman, a new one, originates in the 1960s in West Virginia. The Mothman in and of itself is pretty simple. The Mothman is just this idea of this winged creature. Remember when I said that Wikipedia lists them by aquatic, terrestrial, hominid, and flying? The Mothman is a flying one. The Mothman is really a flying man. It's a man-sized flying thing. Right. And the Mothman is kind of creepy just because it's one of those ones where you don't really know its personality much. It's just this like creepy winged thing. And it's kind of amorphous too. Like if you ask people to draw the Mothman, it's going to be like all over the place. But it describes what was that big flying thing I just saw. And I know that sounds funny, but especially in the evening. Like if a large bird flies by you or you see them fairly close, they can seem really big. You guys, this just happened to me like four nights ago. Sometimes I go jogging like in the dusk, almost at night. And I started jogging and this big freaking bird like flew by me and I was like, whoa. And it was a hawk. It was a big ass hawk though. And I'm like, was that like a golden eagle? I'm pretty sure it was a hawk. But dude, when you're not used to it, those large birds of prey, owls and stuff at night, they are big. And plus in the dusk, you know, you kind of have your depth perception a little bit off. They seem freaking huge. Man, when that hawk flew by, I was like, holy crap. Like it it was one of those things. It was so big, it felt like it had weight, if you know what I mean. Birds usually don't seem like that. You're like, that bird, that's just like a pigeon. It's like, no big deal. But I was like, wow, how does that thing stay in the air? Right. So that is the origin story for the Mothman. That's what everyone says happened. It was just some like birds that you know, came by them and they're like, it must be a man-sized moth bird thing. This has been made more known by the Mothman Prophecies, which is a book, I believe, from 1975. And then they made a movie too with Richard Gere, I think, in 2002. But I don't know, one of my favorites. I like the Mothman. I think it's kind of interesting and just kind of cool. I like the new ones, you guys, 1960s. Speaking of new, the newest one on our list, and I swear to God, it might be my favorite. I might vote this one, the Slender Man. Yeah. Or as I like to call him, Slendy. And I'm not the only one who calls him that. That is one of his preferred terms, the Slender Man. The Slender Man is an internet phenomenon. So now we have the internet, which will bring us real mythology. You guys, we're just going to get more of this. The cryptids that are going to be invented and come into our modern mythology from now on, I swear, you know this is true. They are going to come from YouTube. They are going to come from like internet memes. They're going to come from that world, right? Totally. So the Slender Man starts in 2009 as part of the creepypasta internet meme. The Slender Man is like tall, thin, and he's got like no, his face is just like amorphous. Like it's just like, there's nothing much there. They're just like super tall, super thin, and just sort of real creepy. Wears like a black suit. The original quote unquote photo of the Slender Man, where it's like this doctored thing, but it's real creepy. It's like in the background, kind of following these kids. Oh my God, it's well done. They did a great job of just making this creepy ass guy. Super thin, super tall, featureless. If you interact with the Slender Man, you can get like, kind of like Slender Man's disease or something, where you get a nosebleed and then you like start to get super paranoid, right? It's a well done creepy cryptid. Like, good job. On the downside, there was this incident that some of you guys might have heard about in the early 20-teens, where some really young people, like 12-year-old girls or something, stabbed another 12-year-old because they wanted to become part of the Slender Man's like flock or something. So, you know, really sad, really just young kids who had no idea what they were doing and just really too bad. But then you get the social outcry and the reaction to the Slender Man, which of course goes over the top because the thing is so tragic, which then just feeds into the Slender Man's mythology, you know. But barring that, just as a creation of the modern era, I think the Slender Man is so interesting in terms of the cryptid world and a great addition to the cryptid world, you know. And so... so there you have it. That's my top 10 cryptid list. And I think it's good to just know that explanation of what a cryptid is, right? This rumored or supernatural animal slash being of which there is no proof. Again, you guys, everything I listed here, there is no proof of any of these. These are all made up and they are awesome. I want more Slender Man movies. You know what I mean? I'm going to go watch the Mothman Prophecies like this week. I love these as story tropes, as ideas. I mean, the Kraken, release the Kraken. Maybe that should be on my tombstone. But these are great. And I know there's other ones I didn't talk about that seem to sort of fit a Cthulhu, you know, some H.P. Lovecraft stuff. But that's the best I could do. You know, on my last bit here, I cover this stuff and more often on my YouTube channel. So if you could do cruise over to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology, and just check it out. I'm starting to do a podcast there too. It's just called Kinkella Teaches Archaeology, the podcast, where I will do some of this, but the main reason I'm doing the YouTube podcast on my YouTube channel is to talk about more normal archaeology stuff, right? Stuff that doesn't fit here on the pseudo archaeology podcast, new finds, that kind of stuff. So if you're into that, please do go over to my YouTube channel. It is not on Spotify and Apple and all that stuff yet. So just go subscribe, do all that stuff I need for the huge money I get from all this. Anyway, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology, the podcast. Check it out. And with that, I'll see you guys next time. Thanks for listening to the Pseudo Archaeology podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you like and subscribe. And if you have questions for me, Dr. Andrew Kinkella, feel free to reach out using the links below or go to my YouTube channel, Kinkella Teaches Archaeology. See you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.archpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.